Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
We want to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, Bel Canto Books, which is a female and AAPI-owned independent bookstore in Long Beach, California. But more on them later.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jill.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. We're getting, I don't even want to say some any good news, but like optimistic news the last couple of days about possibly getting to see you face to face very soon.
I'm super excited about that.
I keeping all my fingers crossed.
I also have a promised update for everyone, including you.
Yes, I am on the edge of my seat and I have an idea of where this is going, but no idea of the context or the content, just who it's about.
Yes. So on a previous episode, we talked about how I've been having this bizarre COVID-safe whore house remodel that started in May of 2020.
Yeah.
And we're in like our final, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks now. And I told you when we started that I was terrified that I was going to have a Gilmore Girls moment in that episode where Luke and Lorelai are remodeling the house and she flashes all the contractors. So this morning, it shouldn't have gone this way. I took all my clothes into the kids' bathroom. Uh-huh. And I took my shower and I got out. And while I was in the shower, I changed my mind about what I wanted to wear today.
Of course.
So I stuck my head out in the hallway and I heard my husband on a call in the bedroom across the hall. I heard the kids downstairs and I heard no other sounds. So I thought, great, Josh isn't here yet. I go in my room. I take off my towel.
Oh my gosh.
I'm digging through my dresser. And then I hear like shuffling type noises from where our bathroom is going to be, but is not right now. And I realize I'm not alone. So I dart back to the bathroom as fast as my legs will carry me. I do not grab anything. So now I'm standing in the bathroom with no towel and no clothes. All of the children are on the first floor, and the people on the floor with me are the contractor and Mark, who's clearly talking on a work call. Leaving me no other choice than to stick my head out and tell Josh that I needed him to give me a minute.
Yeah.
To put some clothes on.
This is the closest call I have ever heard in my life.
I want it to be the closest call I experienced, but since I had promised an update, I wanted to deliver.
I don't know what I would have done. I mean, first of all, if I thought I was alone in my house, or I'm sorry, my bedroom, and I had clocked where everybody else was, and I heard a shuffling.
Yeah.
I would have screamed so loud that the neighbors would have called the police.
Yeah.
You handled that very well.
Well, I was afraid if I made any noise, it would just draw more attention to the situation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. That's where I would have gone wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, I scare easily. So even if I knew someone might be here, I would scream. You probably would hear it. And we live across town from each other.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you for the update.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You still did better than Lorelai.
I did. And gosh, you know, that's my goal. That's the goal for the whole project.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
What are we doing today?
There is no good segue. I am so excited about today's episode. We had an opportunity to talk to some friends about something that is totally within the realm of Book It, and it is fandoms, all about fandoms, our feelings about them, their impact on the thing that they are a fandom about, and then it sort of went into other conversations about, you know, Bookstagram and other forms of being a big fan of something, excluding and outside of books. And we got to record with one of our favorite podcasts, two friends of mine and now friends of Jill's, from the podcast, Why Are You Like This?, hosted by Jamie Ryan and Austin Williams. And it was such a blast.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
And I am so excited that...
Cannot wait.
Oh, it was so nice of Why Are You Like This to reach out to us. I'm really excited. So we recorded a whole crossover episode.
Yeah.
It was really, really fun. And I think the nice thing about Jamie and Austin is we had a lot of shared obsessions.
Yes.
Should we get into it? Let everybody hear it. Why Are You Like This is a female-hosted and produced podcast. I've been teasing that this week's episode is Amazing Women plus Michael, and today's indie sponsor is also a female-owned indie bookstore. Perfect
fit. Yes. Yes. Bel Canto Books in Long Beach, California is proudly woman-owned and AAPI-owned and features books by women and people of color. They are also proud members of the Stand Up for AAPI Awareness and Action campaign to stop anti-Asian hate and uplift writers of the Asian diaspora.
They were also recently featured in a write-up on Forbes.com about their Stand Up for AAPI campaign. Plus, they host four online book clubs, including a graphic novel book club.
We love Bel Canto Books. It is our goal to go on an indie bookstore tour, and Jill, I think we have to make a trip out to Long Beach and visit Bel Canto Books.
Absolutely. If nothing else, I want to just marvel at that brick wall with the chairs and the art hanging on it. I'm obsessed with their vibe.
Same. I think we need to move in. We're going to do it. And you can go check them out online at belcantobooks.net and go give them a follow on Instagram at belcantobooks. Okay, we are so excited for today's episode. As you know, in our intro, we're talking all about fandoms today, and who better to talk about fandoms with than two of our favorite podcast pals. Over from Why Are You Like This, we have Jamie Ryan and Austin Williams. Thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Hi, so excited to be here.
Me as well, very, very much. This is Jamie, just so you all know my voice, and I use she, her pronouns.
And this is Austin, and I also use she, her pronouns.
And just real briefly, I just have to acknowledge that we've never introduced ourselves until this moment. We're always introduced each other. So
that
was
true.
A new, unique experience.
This is monumental. We did it on your show. You guys got an exclusive.
This is the only time it's ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm super excited to get into this, at least for Why Are You Like This? This is the first time we've ever had four people on the mics at once, which
oh my
is
God. No, it's not.
You're right. I'm lying. Okay.
But we have a repeat guest from the previous episode where
that's
we had
true.
Four
this
people.
Is our first repeat guest. I'll take okay, perfect. So we do have a first. Okay, uh-huh. On board. So if you were fortunate enough to listen to our masculinity episode, you may already know a little bit about this, but Michael's back with us.
Hey.
Welcome.
And I'm excited, I guess, to kind of lay the land of how we all know each other, but kind of the beginning of this story, I guess, for the four of us, if we're going chronologically, is Michael and I met in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. We were both rocking bowl cuts, like good 90s kids.
What was this, 1996?
Five or something, somewhere in there. But we were like very fast.
Yes, instant friends.
Yeah, instant friends.
You know what? It probably has something to do with our last names are both W. And when you're at the end of the alphabet, like you
that
hold on
actually,
to that.
I think is probably that. Williams Woodson.
Yes.
I actually,
always
that's
in line by each
100%
other.
What it was. Yeah, that feels right. Also, our moms liked each other, which is always important.
And our moms had very similar haircuts.
That's true. And glasses. Guys, it was the 90s. It was the 90s, you know?
They both still have those haircuts. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
Listen, we can't derail on our mom's aesthetic because that's really a whole other episode, but
it is.
So, like, sweet fake W twins separated at birth. We were like together in the same grade school for 2 years, like including kindergarten. And then we got split into different neighborhood schools in the district. And I did not see you again until middle school. But in that window of time when we were absent, it was like enter Jamie Ryan, my very next like fast best friend. And then when we all got to middle school, I kind of, I take like a little bit of onus and pride for making you guys friends, Jamie and Michael.
I was on the lookout for him because you had told me about him.
And what's so funny to me though, is that Jamie is like I left Brent to go to Cottonwood and Jamie and I had 1 year. I remember so specifically seeing Jamie like running around on the playground. And then she disappeared and went to Brent. Like we had a crossover year where then she went into your life. And then we all met up again in middle school.
I honestly feel like this is just like, we're like the Chicago universe on NBC. Like we've done a lot of crossover episodes. We have reunited all the characters like on a new series.
I prefer Shonderland, but I hear you.
Okay. Okay. Listen, I'm not here to come for you, but shout out to Chicago Med. Anyway, so that's kind of like our like wiggle into Book It, but I thought you
But wait, fast forward to adulthood. Yeah. You and I start a podcast. Then Michael starts working at a bookstore where he meets Jill, correct?
Yes.
This is what I want to know.
And at that point, Austin and I are doing Why Are You Like This? And you guys become interested in podcasting?
Yes.
And is that how you met at the bookstore?
Do you want to take it and roast me, Michael?
No.
Oh.
I would never.
All roasting is always welcome.
This is Michael's favorite story.
I don't know what you're talking. Yes, I do. Well, okay. At the time, I was working at a magazine and I was kind of just like looking for something else and wanted to get into the book world more. So I moved on to part-time at a local indie bookstore and then worked part-time as a freelance writer and editor. And Jill, it was the Blue Manatee Children's Bookstore. And Jill, what you were doing accounting? What were you doing for the bookstore?
Yeah, I was kind of doing bookkeeping and some random things.
Okay, yeah. So I really saw you like very sparingly. I worked like three or four days a week and Jill worked every day but came into the office on Fridays or the bookstore on Fridays. And in my part-time work, Jill and I started working really closely. The whole time I'm like, wow, Jill's a really good friend who I love to work with. And then like right when we start the podcast, literally the first day we sat down to talk about the podcast, I don't even remember how it came up, but I was just saying like, it's so fun to work with friends or something. And Jill was like, we're friends? And I was like,
Burn!
13 months on, like, yeah, we're friends, girl.
This does strike me as a story Michael would enjoy telling.
Yes. So Michael always says that he's been friends with me for a year longer than I've been friends with him.
Yes. Because it's the truth. It's the truth that was revealed.
Wow. It's okay. Austin and I hated each other, too.
For 2 years. Earlier. We started out actually as arch nemesis. Nemesis.
Yeah.
And I think maybe then the next question outside of like how we've all kind of been intertwined and know each other individually as co-hosts and that kind of thing is what do two people who speak about like human behavior and horoscopes with a W and weird pseudoscience have to discuss with people who, how would you like to tagline your show?
We have a tagline. We talk about books, frankly.
That's right.
Yeah. Sometimes we're usually pretty kind. Like, I think that we're like, and we're often in agreement. But when we're not in agreement, it's not like Jill's right and Michael's wrong or Michael's right and I'm wrong. It's just like we have big feelings about books.
I love it. And I feel like our shows have that in common, that we all maybe have like big opinions, which I think facilitates good conversation.
Yes.
But our big opinions and your big opinions are bringing us to the topic of fandoms. So a little bit of like human behavior and psychology of like this community, but also like so tied up in literature, which is, I feel like, the birthplace for, in my opinion, and I know we'll get into it, some of the more important fandoms, I would argue. Sorry, Marvel. But
but also graphic novels are books, not to interrupt you.
That's 100%. Fair. That is 100%
absolutely
true.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I was kind of coming, I think, for the movies.
Yes, yes.
I'll, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm here for that.
It's really coming for Disney. Like, screw Disney.
Screw Disney.
There it is.
Hot takes.
Yeah.
Guys, we're going to get sued. We would have to take that out.
Oh, okay, yeah. And I actually don't mean it. I don't mean it. I love you, Disney. I watched Ryan the Last Dragon this weekend. I cried a lot. Like.
But on that note, Jamie, do you want to kind of give us the breakdown of what is a fandom?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that, like, if you guys have listened to our show, you probably know, and I don't want to assume that you've listened to it, but we often begin with a Wikipedia read.
Just our favorite
to, like, resource. Lay some groundwork. And I know that it's not, like, people who are of perhaps older generations will argue that it's not accredited, but it's like a good read on what society thinks.
Yes.
Listen,
so for fandoms, we'll grab a definition.
Randy Pausch, the last lecture. It's more edited than Webster's. Let's go.
That's true. We did a whole bit on that. Anyway, okay, so Wikipedia tells us that a fandom is a subculture composed of fans characterized by a feeling of empathy and camaraderie with others who share a common interest. Fans are typically interested in even minor details of the objects of their fandom and spend a significant portion of their time and energy involved in their interest, often as a part of a social network with particular practices, differentiating fandom-affiliated people with from those who have just a casual interest. So there's a big difference between just, like, kind of casually liking Star Wars and, like, dressing as a character for a significant portion of your life.
Sure. Those seem pretty different. And I think, too, just to kind of acknowledge, like, there are all kinds of fandoms. And primarily, we're going to be talking about the books, the movies, and, you know, to maybe some hosts dismay, the comics, but we can't say for sure.
We will. Yeah. We're so, like, I just want to acknowledge also that there are definitely fandoms, like, for specific celebrities.
Sure.
Like, you know, Kesha has animals and
Rihanna's
celebrities
Navy,
have other fandoms.
The Beehive. Everyone who's obsessed with Real Housewives, I feel like that's a fandom.
That I agree.
Oh my god, I've never thought of that.
Those are, I don't know if I would
Bachelor
consider, like,
Nation. Sorry, guilty as charged.
I don't know if musician fans are fandoms though. Aren't those stands?
Well, but, like, the Grateful Dead people, they're definitely a fandom.
The Deadheads, yeah.
But I mean, like, it operates in different rules than fandoms do. Like,
there's no not usually cosplay.
Well, Kiss fans, that's a cosplay.
Didn't it come from the Stan lyric? Like, isn't that technically, like, musicians, people stan musicians?
So to be, like, 1,000% honest, like, that's a term that, like, is only kind of got its foot in the door of my vocabulary at this point.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to need to just put some more parameters around that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. It's curious. I never thought about being, like, a big musician fan as being a part of a fandom. But I guess, of course,
well, I think
that's true.
That there's overlap in the way that they operate, in that, like, if you
for
think
sure,
of, like,
yes,
the Venn diagram of, like, literature world fandoms and, like, movie world fandoms versus, like, fandom of a person, you could be dressing up. Like, people dress up as Johnny Depp all the time. But, like, I think that the overlap is probably, like, the community. And
sure,
I would venture to guess that, like, literature fandoms have perhaps a more positive community than celebrity fandoms, but that's just a wild guess from me.
I feel like my personal experience is yes, because, and I'm sure we'll get into this, because there is a little bit of, like, pitting book fandoms against each other from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've watched, you know, Harry Potter and Twilight fans yell at each other and also people be a part of both fandoms.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I think, to Jamie's point, I feel like celebrity stuff is a little bit more tumultuous. It's
Twitter,
a little bit
just
like
Twitter explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know that, like, Harry Potter fan, well, that's probably a bad example, but I don't know that, like, some other fans are doing that as intensely about books on Twitter as they are if, like, their idols are fighting with each other. So
yeah, it's just, there's, like, more at stake when there's actual human people involved.
Wow, there it is.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
I couldn't agree more. But I guess, kind of to that point of, like, fandom breakdowns, Jill, Michael, I'm curious, do you guys identify as members of any specific fandoms? And if so, what are they?
Of any kind.
I actually don't know, because that definition is exactly how I think fandoms are. And I've never, I feel like there should be some middle place for people who aren't like that intense about it, but are definitely more than casual.
Beyond a casual fan.
Yeah, like somewhere like above average. And that's how I feel about most of the things that I love deeply. And I think it's because, like, this might be wrong, but I think that we, fandoms really, really took off, I think, when we were just a little bit on the older side of the average fandom age. Yeah. Like, we were upper college.
When, like, internet fandoms took off. Because, like,
literally, that's what I was about to say, yes.
Cosplay existed, but then, like, Tumblr happened when we were in college. Like,
The ability to be in communication with fans across the globe.
And you don't have to drive to a convention.
Yeah, it was at a point where we were, like, already formed. So I don't know. I think I didn't need it as much as younger kids did. So I don't know. I don't think I am, but I think I'm very barely not.
Okay.
I think this is a good call, too, and to, you know, be transparent. Like, Jamie, Michael, and I, Austin, all graduated college the same-ish time.
Yeah.
And Jill, you graduated college earlier than us. So do you have similar feelings about fandoms playing into kind of your stage in life or any particular ones that you identify with?
Yeah, I think this has been an interesting conversation for me so far, because I don't feel like growing up, like when I was in high school, I don't recall anyone being in a fandom of any kind. I don't think that was a thing.
Did you know, like, any Trekkies or anything? Because there's those people.
Yeah, there were those people, and there were, like, people who were into trains.
Oh, yeah. My grandpa, yes.
No, that's a thing. That's a person.
I don't know. That's all I came up with. I will say, though, that after watching Oprah interview Meghan Markle, I might become a Meghan Markle fandom person.
Am I a Markle? Yeah, I think I'm a Markle.
I don't know how you get in her fandom, but I want to apply.
I like this.
Whatever the process is.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'll come to Montecito. Whatever's necessary.
I mean, to be honest, I actually like that you brought this up, because I feel like we should call out Oprah as, like, a fandom. I feel like people are part of, like, Oprah's tribe. Like, I feel like that is, I mean, I feel like most people love Oprah. Like,
totally.
You have to question people who hate Oprah. Yes. Like, something's a little awry.
Yes.
Opengale's Big Adventure was great.
I remember that. They fought a lot.
Irrelevant.
You guys might not be old enough to remember this, but there was a whole book written. There was a lady who decided to, I'm obsessed with books where people try to do something for a year.
Yes, you are.
And there was, I can't remember the name of it. There's a person who decided to watch a whole season, a year of Oprah, and and buy all the things that were recommended on the program.
Oh my God.
And she had a blog. It was back when people blogged.
Yeah.
And then it became a book.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is a great idea.
I love this idea so much, actually. And I also, when you mentioned on a previous episode of Book It about being someone who is a really big fan of people who are like, I'm going to do something for a year, I'm currently reading a book where someone is like, I'm going to do something for a year, and was when that episode came out, because somebody's a slow reader.
Same.
And it really excited me, is that being identified as a genre of things you could be excited about, because I do love that kind of stuff.
Genre fandom.
Yeah, I need to think of a thing to do for a year, because I'm dying. I love these books.
Yeah, we need to find that for you, Jill.
I love it.
I know.
Jamie, do you think that you identify as part of any fandom? Is that something that you would apply to yourself?
I feel like I am a kind of person who is perhaps, like, highly susceptible to, like, fandoms, because I really like the extended fantasy element.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I am not a big reader of fan fiction, but I think conceptually that it's interesting, because I want anyone to take a stab at writing the prequel to the Harry Potter series that is a Hannibal Lecter style book, where we see Voldemort make all of the Horcruxes, because I want to know more about that part of the world. And so, like, in that way, like, I love fandoms, and I think it's amazing to, like, expand upon, like, an environment, a world, like, a situation that is, like, a template kind of that, like, everyone loves. Like how when the Gilmore Girls reboot came out, like it wasn't good, but everyone wanted to watch it because you wanted to be back in that world again. And so in that way, I think that like I do really love fandoms, but am I like a part of one? No, I don't think I ever have been because I've never like engaged communally with anything except when Harry Potter's were coming out and the three of us and some other people did like various parties for book releases and things. But I think I was always too embarrassed, and maybe this would drive us into like another point, but I had like quite a bit of embarrassment about even like reading Harry Potter. Like
I remember that.
Like I like didn't want my parents to know that I was reading
it. Yeah, you hid them in your closet.
I would read it in the closet, like literally funny foreshadowing. But yeah, I think I was like too ashamed of like the nerd elements of being a part of a fandom to ever engage in it. But I think I probably would have loved it because I was like a very imaginative kid and teen.
It's interesting too because like To be embarrassed about something that was so wildly popular, like everyone was reading those.
I wasn't embarrassed at school, though. I wasn't embarrassed in front of my peers. I was only embarrassed in front of my family.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subscribe, I mean, comment, like.
I mean, I definitely fall into the camp that Harry Potter is probably the closest to like a fandom that I feel like I ever identified with. Mm-hmm. I'm also someone who is a really big consumer to this day of commentary. Like I want to hear I really want to hear what people have to say about books or movies, but to be honest, like, and Jamie can testify to this, like I watch so little television and so few movies, but I constantly have ones to recommend to people because I listen to people review them all the time, and I'll be like, this documentary sounds amazing. I recommended one to friends this weekend that I was like, you can stream it online, it's not on a platform, but it is on YouTube. People are like, have you seen this? And I said, no, but I heard a conversation about, I'll probably never watch it, but it sounds great. I was like, I think you guys would love it. It's about dogs.
Oh my
God.
You
know, I really lean into that. And so, like, I have been a really long time listener of, like, since, you know, like middle school, like, long time to some that are the same and some that aren't, of like Harry Potter podcasts. Definitely somebody who is like very engaged in like the online community of people. For sure, oh MuggleNet, like that. In its heyday, of digging in and like wanting to hear what people theorized and had to speculate about. I just like really,
I remember like you doing that and you telling me like the things about like Ollivander's name rearranged was an evil lord.
I was in the chat.
You were deep
room,
in the chat. At AIM time.
I was in the chat.
You had like friends that were just internet friends in middle school.
I absolutely had Harry Potter internet friends. And so I think to that point, I'm like, isn't that being in the fandom?
Yeah,
but it is. To your point, Jamie, I feel like identifying as like a part of a fandom is something that gives me like light embarrassment feelings that, and maybe it's because I'm never somebody who's been like, in cosplay. And so I'm like, if I'm not doing that,
you don't like
and I'm not going to conventions.
Days.
Right. I mean, it gives me the heebie-jeebies, but I'm like, I think I am part of the fandom, but there is a little bit of shame for whatever reason in admitting to that because it feels like nerdy or
sure. It's funny other. Because nerd has had totally, especially in adolescence, I think like you are going to run from anything that makes you stand out. And then like, I think in our young adulthood, like nerd culture became like
super mainstream. Super,
yes, like
super
was the zeitgeist.
And also cool. It became cooler later.
Yeah.
It became okay to be into fantasy. It became okay to be like, I like to read. You know, we finally hit a period in which you could say that.
Yeah. Which I think is another conversation about like the how the internet changed the conversation in general, because like I think part of what made us feel nerdy or unpopular for was because it would cause too much attention on us. But then the internet opened up and we're like, oh, everyone's doing this. Why am I embarrassed?
And is it just fantasy, though, that has
for sure
that? Is it just fantasy and sci-fi and like, or like perhaps maybe like there's room for Jane Austen to also be like an embarrassing potentially fandom?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I wasn't thinking about the embarrassing part.
But as far as, I mean, it definitely can be a fandom, I think, and people are like obsessed with that world. And there's like the texts from, what is it?
Yeah, text from Jane Austen. Yes, yeah, I definitely, if somebody invited me, I would go on one of those Jane Austen tours of England and wear a Regency outfit every day.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I love that.
I totally would. I don't know that I would like organize one myself, but if somebody invited me, I'm there. Yeah,
you should organize it for yourself. Actually, that would be like the dream for you, is to be able to organize. As long as like someone else like makes it happen, I want you to be able to do whatever you want while you're there. But doesn't that feel different? There's something like historical there that feels like.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings us to like, we wanted to talk a little bit about like the longevity of fandoms. And like, we're talking about like Harry Potter's not really very embarrassing because it was so popular when we were exactly the right age. And so our peers all loved it too. But I kind of feel like fantasy and sci-fi gets this embarrassing quote or like bad rep.
Yeah.
Maybe from a time like before I'm cognizant of, because of like Star Wars and Star Trek and that kind of thing. And I just, I don't know, like Jill, I don't know if this is a weird question to ask you, but do you have like any insight about like the development of like that being embarrassing? Because for people who were in high school at the time we were, it wasn't as much, I think.
I remember being surprised early in my librarian career. It has always been the case where you would see, it was usually a pack of girls and they would get into a series or a section and all of them are reading the same thing together. What seemed to change very early was that it went from being like very clicky, where like little groups were all doing different things, where all of a sudden, and I do think Michael's point about the internet is the root of this. All of a sudden, it wasn't one group doing this and one group doing that, and one group doing another. It was every single person on the planet is reading Harry Potter. Wow. Every single person is reading Twilight. So it just, all the phenomenons became huge. And it wasn't just in Kid Lit. I mean, I remember when everybody read, what's the book? And then Tom Hanks was in the movie. That didn't tell you anything.
Da Vinci Code.
Oh, Da Vinci Code.
Wow.
Dan Brown.
The Da Vinci Code, yes.
This podcast loves the Da Vinci Code.
Jamie and I talk a lot about Dan Brown from time to time on our
and
show.
And the effect he's had on culture.
Yeah, for sure. No, but yes, you're right, Jill. Like,
yeah, I mean, everybody was talking about that book. And priests were having round tables at the library.
Oh, my God.
You were like, how many priests are in my contact list? I need to have a library program. It just felt like social media and the internet, it made everything bigger. And so instead of a book being, you know, like a trickle here or there, it was like everybody's doing something at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it being so like kind of centralized on the internet around like more specific books, movies, etc., like, do you feel like there's more pressure to really like or enjoy something? Like, does Bookstagram culture kind of like ever detract from the experience of being a fan of something?
I think yes. And I think that,
yeah,
I think everything has like a peak before it like levels out. And I think that, especially with Bookstagram, In the ways that the internet has made it wonderful for these types of conversations, like we're saying, like we met people who liked this thing that we thought was dumb. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of it, there are these weird, not real, but totally real rules that the internet has created around how to connect with or respond to something, in this case, books. And we've talked a lot about this on our podcast about how like, I think Bookstagram can be a little bit toxic, and there's more of an emphasis on how many books am I reading versus am I like connecting with what I'm reading in any way, or am I like actually enjoying it? So I think like I think Bookstagram is lovely, and I've found a lot of really amazing people on there and books that I ended up loving, but there's this weird like pressure to like something that you maybe didn't because everybody else does.
Sure.
And to like shift your reading goals based off of like what everyone's doing right now, which in this case is just reading 1,000 books a week.
I also feel like it introduces a lot of gatekeeping. Yes. Like, you can't be a bookstagrammer or you can't be a book person if you don't do X, Y, Z.
Right.
I think Michael and I are both like, that's...
Forget
are
it.
Are we cussing? I was gonna be like, that's that. All like, yeah, that's all bullshit. Cussing.
We're it's fuck balls that, yeah. out on this podcast. You say whatever you want.
I hate gatekeeping.
Me
and
too.
I do think that's a fan... Well, it happens in so many things, but it's so easy for it to happen in fandoms.
Totally, yes.
Oh, you're right. There is like an attitude of like, I'm more versed in this literature or fandom or like...
Yes.
It's like when you say that you like a band or if someone's wearing a band t-shirt, it used to be a thing to be like, name three songs that
exactly.
band plays.
Right. Instead of just like, I graphically like this t-shirt and that's okay.
Yeah.
Or just like being like... I like to read, so, like, I loved these books, but I don't know, like, every single minutia detail
I read this
about
quickly.
The world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to. That doesn't make me less of a fan or less of a reader.
Yeah.
I think one thing I, too, really appreciate about Book It, and honestly, like, enjoying your podcast has made me feel confident in uh-huh. talking about reading
Me
and
too.
Enjoying it.
Honestly. Aww.
Because I feel very self-conscious about what a slow reader.
You got some
I
slow
am.
Readers over here. Yeah.
On this podcast. Also somebody, honestly, who's like easily distracted and like, yeah. you know, I currently have read about a third of this book. And then for the last month, I've just carried it around from room to room and slept next to it.
Absolutely.
So,
yes. Yes.
And you guys make me feel not bad about that.
Yeah. You shouldn't.
And so thank you. Because I do hear you on being like, well, I can't be part of the club if I don't X, Y, and Z. And it's yeah. interesting too. One of the other things I kind of think about fandoms, and I don't know if you guys, anybody else kind of feels this about any particular fandom, but I think one of the things that I, especially when I was younger, you know, like yeah. late elementary school, middle school, one of the things I really appreciated about being into any kind of series or something was maybe also the element of it being a little secret. And the one that readily comes to mind is Lemony Snicket series of Unfortunate Events. And there's...
I forgot!
And Jamie also loved these books. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's so cool about it is there are all these like kind of underlying secret things going on. And there's a secret society and there are like
yeah.
books about the society and codes. And that to me was really fun. And that existed in a way, or at least my experience in the way I engaged with it. I was not in like all the chat rooms and Mm-mm. hearing, you know, the discord that people had to say in the same way it was about Harry Potter. It felt very much like this puzzly thing that felt like secret. And I was like in on the secret. And I had like one friend that I talked to
yeah,
about
it was
me. And right. And it was. And that was like its own kind of fun experience.
Sure. Yes. Community.
It felt like we had secret mischief we were up to all the time.
Right. But I think if those books had the, you know, hype and everyone was reading them yeah. in the same way that people were reading Harry Potter, I actually don't think I would have enjoyed it as much. I think it would have taken away from the secret themes of the books. I don't know. Do you guys feel like there's anything about something feeling like really personal
yes.
that makes it better?
But also I think that, and I'm speaking, I think just for myself, but Harry Potter specifically was the first time I'd ever like read something as it was happening and seeing it finish.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that I loved reading until after I finished the series, because it was like the most satisfying experience of like, it wasn't a series that had been out. It wasn't Lord of the Rings. It had been out for decades. It wasn't something else. It was something that was coming out, and it felt like it didn't just feel like reading. It felt like an experience that we were having at the same time because it was happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that aspect of it, I think it's less of like, how many people are reading this? What I feel nerdy. I think it's more about, for me, it was about that feeling of like urgency because it was happening at the same time as I was experiencing it.
There was an urgency, too, I think, to, like, finishing them. Like,
yeah.
the Harry Potter
oh,
specifically.
Oh, that's another
because,
thing with fandoms.
Like, they would, with fandoms that are actively releasing content. Even with, like, Game of Thrones, watching it, not just reading
right.
it. Like, there is the pressure to finish as quickly as possible
yes.
in order to be able to engage in the fandom without experiencing any spoilers. And there's...
Yeah.
That's,
I was going
like,
to say, not be spoiled,
right,
for sure.
This, like,
which is a much bigger problem now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that Marvel is not popular with everyone, but
it's fine.
It's been really interesting. I had never seen any Marvel. I didn't know anything about it. And my husband said, oh, let's watch WandaVision. And I was like, fine. So we watched like the first episode and he turns it off and he goes, what do you think? And I was like, I don't get it.
Sure. That might happen when you haven't seen a Marvel.
And he was like, well, you know the backstory, right? And I was like, no. I don't. So then he talked in what sounded to me like gibberish for like 10 minutes. And then I tried to repeat it back. And apparently my understanding was all wrong. Uh-huh. And he goes, well, we should just really watch the movies. And now that we have Disney Plus, we can like watch them in chronological order and not in the order they were released. And blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I was like, no, you know, I'm good. Let's just keep watching. Yeah. And then we get like two more episodes in and I like ask one more question and he's like, we really need to like watch all the movies. And then the kids got excited. Oh. And this is where the fandom bites you in the ass, because then I was outnumbered.
Yes.
And so then we started on this mission. We are now watching all the movies.
This is brand new information. I didn't know this.
You didn't? Oh, okay. We're six movies in now. It's been going on for two weeks.
Oh, shit. Okay.
2 weeks. Wow. Six of these movies. And so I've been writing up little summaries of them on Twitter. And it's been really funny because a couple of our friends are really big comic book people. And they've just been finding the whole thing hilarious because it is very much like an outsider's perspective.
Oh, yeah. I like that though, actually.
Yeah, because like we got to we had watched like two Iron Man movies and I was like, Pepper Potts is stupid. And please don't send me hate mail. Mark was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I don't care if you have a shoot 'em up suit and a giant house in Malibu. If you bring me a food I'm allergic to for my birthday, I'm not in love with you.
Yeah.
No.
That is very fair.
Yeah, no, just no. But it's been really interesting because either people who disagree or just keep scrolling, which is great. But a couple of people who have commented back have been like, this is just fascinating from like, I don't know, almost like a anthropological perspective. I have no idea what's going on.
It's like if you had someone who had no exposure to Harry Potter at all,
I have to plug this. There is a podcast. It's called Potterless, and it's about a grown man in like the last couple years who has never touched anything Harry Potter and does it all for the first time and commentates on it. And it's super cool if you want to enjoy, like, again, an outsider's perspective, because Harry Potter, to your point, is an example of something where like there aren't a lot of outsiders left.
Yeah.
That is very true.
I'm curious about this because, Jill, you've got your kiddos who are excited about the Marvel journey. And we're talking a little bit generationally about like when things shifted for us. What are your kids into? Are there fandoms in their life? Are they Marvel fans? Like, what
I couldn't even think of anything for children right now.
Yeah. Truman's really into Harry Potter. So Mark is over the moon. And he's very much in that place where, again, Disney Plus, we've watched The Mandalorian, and there's animated series and that go in between all the movies. And he can get the books where you can like know the name of like every single background character and their backstory. And he gets going sometimes. And even my husband, who is also into it, is like, no one can see me. I mean, just like, you don't know where to jump in because it's like he's speaking a foreign language.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just totally. It's way, way, way over my head. I have seen the Star Wars movies. They're nice.
Well, I'll tell you this. I had a college professor, a marketing professor who previously worked for Mattel when they owned all the rights to all the Star Wars stuff. And so they were making all the toys. And so Mattel representatives would be at the conventions, you know, yeah. showing you the new action figures or whatever it was. And my professor said fans used to come at him kind of like, well, you guys don't know whatever. And he goes, and oh I had God. To know everything. And people would be like, wow, you really know this stuff. But he was also like, yo, it was like my job to know that yeah. stuff because yeah. that was how I fed my family. So yeah. I was like ready to come for these Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. But what a journey that people were like coming after the toy sellers at conventions too. Right. Of like, are you even allowed to be here?
Right.
That's insane.
So, you know, kind of digging in even further to some of like the senses of community and the way yeah. participating in fandoms really affects us psychologically. I was kind of, you know, scouring the internet for like good resources that were going to really lay it out for me. And
me as
we
well.
Really didn't. Yeah. And we really didn't come up with something that really exemplified that. But one of the things that I found really interesting that I did read a little about was just about how much fan cultures are examples of participatory cultures. Mm. Basically just meaning that like participatory cultures, the fans are acting like not only as the consumers, shout out to the commodities and, you know, all of capitalism that we're alluding to, but also as the producers and creators as some form of creative, you know, media, whether it's
fan
the
fiction,
podcasts
costumes.
And stuff.
Right.
Exactly. You know, yeah. cosplay, however you're doing it. And when I was reading about that, it's funny, the kind of like nostalgic thing it made me feel was like, huh, I don't know if I'll experience kind of fandom or feeling engrossed in a real participatory culture again in the same way that I felt like I did with Harry Potter. And it yeah. made me feel like a little like, oh, like nostalgic qualities of like, I don't know if I'll get to do that again.
Yeah.
And it also is like a way that when you find out someone maybe participates a little bit in a fandom that you do, it's kind of the way to, I don't know, start a conversation, a friendship.
For sure. Connection point for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so do you have kind of specific feelings or times in your life? I know we've talked about like personal journeys, but a time that maybe you felt like it created a sense of community for you?
Well, Michael had a Harry Potter club that he started.
Well, oh, that's true.
Well, I was going to say, like, that makes total
Jill,
sense
do you not
me.
Know that? Sorry, Jill's face.
This was brand new information
what?
To me. What? I knew that Harry Michael. Potter was deeply meaningful to you, but founding a club?
Yeah.
That's next level.
You made an official club at UC.
It became
University
an official club. I would not be surprised. Well,
a university club?
Yes, Jill.
He did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to. Someone else made it official, like did the work, reached out to the university. Like that was not me or.
If we don't want to say co-founder, you were on board at the beginning.
No. We definitely started it.
Okay. Yeah,
I was exactly. like under.
You were the co-founder.
I was the head boy.
Yeah.
And Jill, actually, guess who was head girl?
Mm-hmm. Guess.
I don't know.
Lily.
Oh my goodness. I love this story already.
And so we were having these discussions about the book in class, and it was one of the best classes I've ever taken. And one day, my professor lived in Louisville, and she had a really long commute.
That's ridiculous.
School.
Sorry, go on. That's irrelevant. Like, what?
Well, and so then one day she came into class, was like, my car is really fucked. Like, I'm canceling class. And so we were like, oh. And so then Lily and I just stayed back in the empty classroom and talked for like 2 hours about Harry Potter. And then our relationship formed in that conversation. And then we decided, like, obviously there's an interest here beyond like the classroom and our personal interest in the series. Like, let's start a club. And from there it took off. But my relationship with Harry Potter starts way before that, and like in even in more personal ways.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it affected your community around enjoying this series? Do you feel like it affected at all your sense of identity?
The club or Harry Potter?
I guess both. And they can be separate.
Yes. Well, it's hard to talk about because of just the recent past with
for sure.
Yeah.
But I do want to, I think what makes it so heartbreaking is how important it was to me. And when I was coming out, I was like 19, super alone. I lived in a single dorm and had like definitely come out to myself and was going through like the waves of disappointment and like unhappiness about it, and truly just kind of at random, because it was in my nature, just like grabbed a book and started reading, and it was Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. And I'd read the books before, and I was already an above average fan, but it wasn't fandom level, I don't think. And in Goblet of Fire is when Hagrid is quote unquote outed as a half giant. And everyone
I just got chills.
Is talking about like, well, we kind of knew. Mm-hmm. It isn't that big of a deal, but it is a huge deal in that world. And to Hagrid, it's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And the trio led by Hermione, I think it's important to say, like, go to Hagrid's hut and are just like lovingly impatient with him and saying like, we don't care. Like, we love you. We don't care that you're a half giant. And the person that's in there is Dumbledore, who is canonically gay. And there's a lot of conversation about the way she presented that. And I understand the criticism. Mm-hmm. Saying to Hagrid, you can't make everyone happy. Like, if you're reaching for universal popularity, you're going to be hiding in this cabin for a long time. And that was really when like the Wizard of Oz moment happened in my life, where like everything kind of went into Technicolor, and I was like, okay, like I can't worry about that if I'm going to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And it like really in not casual terms saved my life, and is why I get really upset and emotional thinking about just what's happened with it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. And then the Harry Potter series, or I'm sorry, the Harry Potter club years later, I had just broken up with like my first same-sex relationship. And really then felt like it was when I was coming out, because I like came out and really quickly was in this relationship. And then we broke up and I realized like I gave myself no time to like figure out who I am, and that was really important. I look back on that time with a lot of love for myself, honestly, and just think like I look back with a lot of patience. And in that, most of my really important relationships came to be, and one of those is Lily, and that came from the Harry Potter Club.
I love that. I think too, I like candidly, I have never thought about that experience with Hagrid being outed as a half giant as something that resembled like an LGBT coming out story. And I'm sure people have discussed it that way, but I've never heard it discussed that way. That's totally really cool.
I think that, yes, the Hagrid moment is a huge part of like kind of like, I think LGBT plus people probably notice that moment more than other people. But beyond like the acceptance of Hagrid, I think that Harry Potter as a whole, or any book where you have a main character who is presented like as other. So even like Roswell, the TV show where they were teen aliens, like,
sure.
I think that LGBTQ plus people really dive into and enjoy those books, medium, fandom, whatever, where the main character is like not fitting in their regular life. Like Harry in Muggle world, like it doesn't work. And there's like this other stuff that's like special about him, but he has to like find that community of people. And I think that through line, and in Roswell, like the alien children finding each other, I think that a lot of LGBTQ people really identified with that part of Harry Potter also. Like, oh, I have this secret life. I know what it's like to live in a cupboard under the stairs, you know? And so, yes, it's the Hagrid moment, but it's also the entire theme of the series, right. I think
it really speaks to what is so hurtful and damaging about the situation with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the books are so much about the power of love and the power of friendship and being who you are. And, you know, both with Harry, but you see it even in the not the main characters, like Neville Longbottom, for example.
Oh, wow.
And so when you, and then giant fandoms build up a feeling because they want to spread this themes of love and acceptance and friendship. And then the creator of that experience and that world turns out to not embody those values. Staunchly. I think it kind of leaves you adrift.
I totally agree, Jill. And this is why we on Book It, we've, from the very beginning, we've talked about this because she has in no way made it a secret that her views do not mirror what she's told everybody.
She has not made children. It easy for
and,
us.
It's just been really complicated and hard. And in regard with, in terms of fandoms, I think people, it's the part of fandom that I think can be kind of toxic, where it's like, on one hand, there's one side of the fandoms who love the source material and then kind of shit all over any adaptation or anything.
Oh, you're right.
Possible.
It's not quote unquote canon. So which is
like,
it.
I will never understand. Every adaptation is an abridgment. Like, that is the nature of adaptations. So, like, if you go into it looking for a carbon copy, you're going to be disappointed. They are different mediums. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other camp that is too forgiving and can't be critical or I think they feel I understand the impulse to not want to because it means so much. I think like the easiest thing for us to do is if someone who is a marginalized person is saying this person or this thing is hurting me, is for us to be like, you are right. Mm-hmm. I am sorry. And I'm not going to participate in this anymore. It is heartbreaking. And it's been hard, like emotionally, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it just sucks. And it sucks mainly for the people who it's hurting. And then, and it's just really complicated. I also think that because of it, fans have felt more free to confront aspects of the book that also just haven't mm-hmm. aged well outside of it.
Yes.
There's like kind of a lot of fat phobia. There's
fat phobia.
And I think that's so fair. I think I think it's okay to say, I loved this and it's disappointing me.
It's written by a person who is a three-dimensional flawed person. And like a lot of her biases came through in the text and we're realizing some of that now.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's interesting that Jill, you might have a little insight on that we don't, is how do you navigate this as a parent when, you know, we're talking about how do we engage with something that was mm-hmm. important to us, but I don't know how I would navigate someone else saying to me, like, I've never, you know, read that, like, I want to read these, and not just to the, you know, Michael's point, the things that are being said currently that are so hurtful, but also things that didn't age well. Like the extreme fat phobia that we see reoccur with a lot of characters.
Yeah, it's hard, and I don't know. I don't know that our approach is typical, but the books are still hugely, very widely read. At least in amongst our kids and their friends and classmates, and you don't want to create a situation where your kid is the oddball out because everybody else is aware of a pulp culture thing and they're entirely clueless about it.
I wasn't allowed to watch Rugrats, so I understand.
Right. Right. It's like you have to pick your battles. And I went for Fortnite and let Harry Potter go.
Okay.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah.
But we do... Pippa has read all the books now. I love that you were talking about The Goblet of Fire because she and I have this little thing going. That's her favorite of the series. And I was always really down on it, but I feel like the two of you are working on me about it. And she really, really loves them. And she goes back and rereads them quite a bit. And so last year, she's 12 now. About 12 and a half. So I would say when she was 11 and a half, 12, I felt like, you know, she has gay people in her life. She is aware of what that means. And so I felt like we could have a conversation about, J.K. Rowling and about trans issues, and that she could, at a 12-year-old level, a little bit understand. I did really, really press that she doesn't need to feel bad because she likes the books and she should keep reading them if she likes them. But I also just wanted her to be aware, mm-hmm. the rest of our kids haven't engaged with them as much. Penny read the first book and liked it, and she got to the Chamber of Secrets and really felt like it was too scary for her so far. Mm. But it's definitely, and it's challenging for me too, because I loved like Little House on the Prairie growing up.
Oh my God. That was my gateway into books. I love Laura Ingalls Wilder so much. I wanted to live in a dugout.
Right.
Jill, this is so your language.
I would, but I have not given that book to our kids.
Yeah.
And so it becomes really challenging for me because I feel like I need to be more thoughtful. Like, what's the difference?
Sure.
And why would I give them Harry Potter and not Little House?
Mm-hmm.
Because both become a, well, I mean, I guess one is the author and one is the content of the book, but yeah, I don't know. It's very, very complicated, but I would say that generally most kids, it's still really widely read and very popular. And I don't think a lot of kids are clued into anything about J.K. Rowling or her opinions and feelings.
It's almost like when we're given required reading in school and it's like something that is just like problematic and it's mm-hmm. like
yeah
and then in the course of the of being required to read it, part of the discussion is that it's problematic.
Yeah
and that's a hard one for me too, because I teaching is so incredibly hard, and I don't ever want to be down on a teacher, but some of the reading lists that have come home, I'm like, hey,
why?
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. Island of Blue Dolphins was on one of the kids' lists, and I was like, hey, just wanted to make you aware. Like, here's like three articles, and like, if you wanted like a Native American experience book, like, here's three newer ones that are better.
Mm. Yeah, we have a two-parter about this in season one.
Yeah, like it's really, really hard. I love
that you're bringing this up, because I went to an all-girls high school, and I think because of that, we were really able to engage in a way that I know I wouldn't have at a co-ed school mm. about classic literature and what was wrong mm. about it with women. I specifically, and I don't remember this poet's name, but he was like, you know, a big wig at the time of, like, I don't know, many of the famous British poets, but I remember reading it in Brit Lit, and this is graphic, so get ready. Mm-hmm. But essentially, we read this part, we're reading it out loud in class, and my teacher is like, okay, guys, like, what's he saying? And everybody's like, I don't really know. And like, one by one, people slowly got it. And we were like, oh my God, oh my God. The poem is like a love poem. It is celebrated like in the canon of like English poets, like writing to woo women. And the exact like translation of the poem into like modern day is like, listen, babe, have sex with me, because you know, if you die tomorrow, the worms when you're decaying in the ground are going to swim up your vagina anyway. And you won't be a virgin. And the conversation
it's like
that we
the
were
worms
able to
doc
have,
take your hymen or some shit.
Yes, 100%. Like, honestly. And the conversation we were able to have, though, one, as a 16-year-old, I would not have been comfortable having in front of boys, but also my professor, like a woman, she was like, y'all, like, people celebrate this in like literature canon. She goes, this is messed up. And I am so grateful that that was my academic experience as, you know, a young woman growing up. But I think about how we need spaces where it's, you know, I was in a space where we could talk about like, this is messed up about how they're talking about women. But I think we're still, and those spaces aren't everywhere, but I think we even, you know, have fewer to be like, this is messed up about how it's talking about the LGBT mm-hmm. community. This is messed up about how it's talking about Black people or other people of color. And to be like in a room that's like, you know, predominantly white and male, you might not have those conversations.
Totally. Absolutely.
What if I was like, as a white male, what if I was like, I don't agree, you're wrong.
Those are your projections.
And I can say that because I'm gay.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm oppressed.
Oh my God.
That's excellent. As Jill was talking earlier, I thought of this, and I just think that it's so interesting that J.K. Rowling chose to write from a a male main character when I kind of feel like the crux of her transphobia is her feminism. Like, she's pushing trans women out of the space of feminism so constantly that tells me that she's like really worried about like any type of masculinity being in that space. Yes. And so why would you choose to write your main character as a teen boy? I just don't understand.
Well, and then write under a male pseudonym.
Correct. And I think that that's probably just like internalized oppression stuff. Yes. That flips around and comes back out at other people.
Yeah.
That's all. Maybe there's not anything to talk about there, but I had to call her out for that or something.
But that's which is a layered reason why this sucks, because yeah. I like
it's
that
her
it's
her own
written,
oppression that's making this happen.
But because like writing from a male's writing a male main character in a wildly popular series.
Mm-hmm.
This, I don't know how to say this because I don't believe in like gender norms, but she. Mm. Offered Harry a lot of emotion that I don't know a male character would have done. Oh. And it allowed boys to feel emotional, and because we saw emotional boys. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. Wow. I felt really like allowed. Mm-hmm. And well, go ahead, please, Jill. Interrupt me.
Well, the other thing I really like about about Harry as the central character is that it's a boy who is hurting, but it's not that kind of male, like broken, like, oh, someone's going to come and fix me. It's more like I'm hurting, but I'm surrounded by my friends and I'm working yes. on it. Mm. And nothing he achieves in that book is like single-handedly like I'm a superhero. It's like right. I did this with cooperation and friendship. Yes. Which makes
that's
it
also
so weird.
That's also so LGBTQ
yes,
though, because
exactly.
the idea of like chosen family and like yes. being like I'm in pain but I'm figuring it out and like I'm surrounding myself with the people that are like helping me like, you know, find my magic, if you
absolutely.
Will. Be it yeah. real or just gay magic.
Well, and I feel like it normalizes family estrangement
yep.
in a way that wow. you don't see oh. a lot in like kids literature at all.
That's
that,
for
that
sure
and Matilda.
A big part of it. Oh my God. And Matilda.
Yeah.
I loved yeah. Matilda.
Yeah. I love Matilda.
Miss Honey was a hottie. I just have to say that.
yeah. We can all agree to that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's also why like I totally understand why people are upset about the way that Dumbledore is presented as gay is because it feels...
And when you say that, you mean that she announced it not in the book,
post,
outside
yes.
of it, after all of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I get that people are like, why not just put it in the text? Like,
I kind of feel like there was always just room for him to be gay and it wasn't...
And,
she didn't
And that's
choose.
Why it doesn't bother me, because I think it that kind of conversation is... It gets a little too close to like... the right way to be gay. And I he has always read gay to me. And I think that as a closeted yeah. young person, it would have been harder for me. I think I wouldn't have read these books because I would have been afraid to out myself if he had just been like wildly openly like saying I'm
oh,
gay, I'm
sure.
gay. It felt like some space for me to like be closeted with him in some way.
And also, I think that it not naming him as gay, but rather kind of just giving, it's not a reveal. It's right. maybe a soft reveal is the biggest thing I would say when we learn about sort of his relationship with,
yeah.
what's that other wizard's name?
Grindelwald.
Yeah. Grindelwald, excuse me. I'm not a German.
Out of the club.
Yeah.
Get it right or you're not allowed to talk about Harry Potter on this podcast, okay? We're going to cut you out.
Keeping these gates tight. But I think that, to your point, if he had been like in a relationship with a man or something in the book, or like it was explicitly named that he was gay, I also would have, I think, as a young closeted gay, felt threatened by that.
Yeah.
But if he can exist as a character where he can just be gay for 900 years or however long
yes.
he lived, and we're not even talking about it, that's yeah. the best case scenario.
Same.
He
was,
can just date Grindelwald
normalized.
And Grindelwald, and we know that's what's happening, and we don't give a shit.
It's not yeah. his character. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not his arc.
And I will say, maybe to some to look at another side of it too, because
yes.
I think I would have loved to see an openly gay character Absolutely. In the Harry Potter series. And yeah. I think that would have been really important. But Dumbledore being the role of professor, I guess I can also acknowledge that all the other professors that are in the narrative, we do not see spouses. We do not see love lives. We do not really.
Only like Hagrid. Hagrid's
the only one we see a little bit of flirtation with. But like, we don't hear about it with McGonagall. Like, if you're entrenched in wanting to know the backstories of some characters, like, you hear about, you know, Snape she had like Lily. A long lost love. But it happens outside of the canon. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And,
totally.
And Snape and Lily, I said Snake. What is this, Degrassi? but Snape and Lily, to that point, like, it was from like younger years. You don't see so much of like the personal right. lives of any of the teachers. Nope. So to that credit, I guess I'm like, yeah, well, I guess we saw as much of Dumbledore's love life as we saw of every Anybody other else's. Teacher That's at the very school true. For the most part.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so like there's some merit there, but like, I don't know, there could have been gay students. Where were they? Because well, we there watched definitely the was gay years students. At Hogwarts yeah. happen for sure.
Well, and here's the thing. We are not right and we are not wrong. Like, this is just how I feel about it. Yeah. And people who... Yeah. who really are like upset that Dumbledore wasn't like overtly meant like said to be gay, like that is totally sure. fair, and I like totally understand that. At the end of every episode, Why Are You Like This plays a verbal game, and we just played one. And if you head over to their podcast once you're done listening to this episode, listen to their version of this episode, because in it is a really fun, silly would you rather style game. But since you know this is a crossover episode and Jamie and Austin, you're our guests today, we thought it would be fun to present you all with our version of a verbal game. What is something that you, any of you personally, love so much that you wish was more of a fandom? Like, what is something as an adult that you're just like, why isn't anyone talking about this?
Oh.
So I'll start.
Yeah.
Mine is The Chronicles of Prydain by Lloyd Alexander.
Yeah.
And I read those books first in college with the same professor who taught Harry Potter to us, Tamara Heller, and it was a independent study. Mm. And Lloyd Alexander was like buddies with C.K. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. They were all writing books at the same time. And they were those books that were like the right books for me at the exact right time. I, like I said, I named my dog after the main character, Taryn, and they're so good. I'm surprised that they haven't had such the same lasting impact as Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. And they've tried a couple of times to do series or something, and Disney recently bought the rights again to it.
Mm.
But I just wish it had more success into the 21st century.
I do feel like the timing was off for that one, because yes. I also read some of those, but I think I was too young to read sure. them. And so like I read one and then didn't finish the next one because it was like a lot for me at the time.
Yeah, sure.
But it was when the movies came out, and the seeing the movies made me want to read the books, which is why it happened. But then upon watching the movies, I realized that they were like very bad, and also like yeah. the movies were really frightening, but they were targeted at kids who were younger than me, even though I was the right age to read the book. And so it felt like a marketing mismatch on that.
Well, it was that thing that Disney did where it was a thing that the studio, which we will not name, did where yeah. it took
the and guys, if we could just hold really quick so we can insert the ad for Disney Plus.
Right? Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Okay. This episode is sponsored by Disney Plus. I love those books. The fourth one is called Taryn Wanderer, and it is absolutely for gay kids everywhere. I mean, it's just Aww. Like, I don't know who I am. Who am I?
Yeah.
Hmm.
My answer is really dumb. I couldn't like think of one, because I feel like the books that I really escaped into as a kid did have giant fandoms. But outside of the world of fantasy and outside of the world of books, something that I really love that I feel like nobody knows about is the show Keeping Up Appearances.
Oh my gosh, Jamie.
Oh.
You two only know what it is because I've showed it to
yes,
you, right?
You changed yes, my life.
Exactly. I only know about this through you.
You changed my life.
It's so good. If
so
anybody,
niche.
It's super niche. I know about it because I was a non-cable kid growing up. And so I watched a lot of PBS. And on Saturday nights on PBS, there was this lineup that ended or Red Dwarf was on when I had to go to bed. So that's what I think it ended with. But it was like keeping up appearances as time goes by with Judi Dench.
Love Judi Dench Red so
Green,
much.
I know. Red Green, which was...
I loved Red Green.
So annoying. Canadian show.
Well, and I mean, as a fellow PBS kid... I mean, you had to have been aware of Doctor Who way before
Doctor
Who.
Yes, and Doctor Who was in that block. I was so aware of it before it was mainstream. And then it came mainstream, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is this weird thing that used to come on when I was falling asleep on my parents' couch. And now everybody loves it. And I'm like, when now Doctor Who comes on.
It's this weird thing that's falling asleep on my couch.
Yeah. And so Keeping Up Appearances is just like a 30-minute comedy starring this woman who is an incredible actress named Patricia something.
Bouquet.
And she was at one time an opera singer, and you can tell that in the way that she like carries her character and like uses her voice. It's just like it's just like this cozy little English comedy that makes me really happy. And no one knows about it. And I own the box set. And I don't know where else to watch it except for my DVDs.
I'm so happy about this answer. My other answer was going to be Girls Gone, or was it Bad Girls Club?
Oh, shit. Oh. Fuck. Well,
that's now she's rethinking her whole answer. She's like, well, it's probably actually.
Well, Jamie and I had Jill knows. Go ahead, Sarah Michael.
Yeah, no, just that Jamie and I had like a shared bad year. And in that bad year, we just watched Bad Girls Club after Bad Girls Club after Bad Girls Club. But we were embarrassed about it. So we just called it The News. And anytime someone asked us what we were watching, we would say The News.
And you know what going to the library was in the same time of Code Words?
It was Frisch's. Going to eat at Frisch's. Yeah.
We would watch The News and go to the library.
That's hilarious. I'm embarrassed to tell you I don't know what Bad Girls Club is.
Jesus Christ. Jill.
Oxygen.
How
just
much
look
time
up oxygen.
Do you have?
I don't, you know what? I'm actually not, I'm not 100% sure how much I want you to know.
I like, don't I, think you would like it.
No, no, nor should we. I mean, like, it is a mess.
It was a specific time. And
it was the chaos I needed.
I was in the process of coming out to myself. Yeah. And I think watching like a lot of really intoxicated, like scantily clad women who are around my age just scream at each other and throw panini makers was
it's nuts.
The best thing for me.
Panini maker. I don't get no sleep because of y'all. Now y'all don't get no sleep because of me. Okay.
Sorry, Jill, you've never seen it, but there's.
I haven't, but I a little bit want to now.
Yeah, you won't stop. You won't stop.
And it's not a contest. It's like it's like the real world in that there's no competition at all. Like,
but in the real world, they have a job.
You're right.
Like they all work together and have their lives taped. That's in the intro.
You're right.
Bad Girls Club is just like a weird song, and then just trying not to get kicked off for kicking each other's asses.
Well, the only thing that they ever get kicked off for is physical altercations. So that's like volunteering to go home because you're over it, or like actually hurting someone else is the only way you can go home.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, guys.
All right. Sorry. You were going to answer, I think.
So Michael and I we've done two episodes now in each season on adaptations. Mm-hmm. And I just dream now of being like in some kind of club where all we do is like read and then watch adaptations one right after the other.
I am joining.
Yeah. It has been so much fun. Even when I didn't like the book or the TV experience, I still enjoyed talking to Michael about it.
Yes.
And I want that to be a thing. And then one of the adaptations that I want made is that when I was growing up, I devoured the Sweet Valley Twins books.
Oh.
And I want the Sweet Valley Twins to get like a 90210-esque series.
It is time.
Can watch in part of my, and I'll reread all the books as part of like my adaptations fandom.
Club. Oh, yeah.
Wow. I want them to have a crossover with the Babysitter's Club.
Yeah. Like,
that's a show now.
Mm-hmm. And now PLL style, some of them are
back now.
And
like it used to just be back as graphic novels, and now the actual books have been, the Ann Martin books have been re-released with new covers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I want that for the Sweet Valley Girls, but I also want like a Gossip Girl 90210-esque.
Oh, absolutely. The OC
series. Yes.
So good.
Also, just shout out to Nancy Drew. I just really like those love videos.
I wanted to name her as well. The I did. I was like, Nancy.
Yeah.
Nancy. Yeah. The Hardy Boys, all of them. Mm-hmm. And then if I could like shout out to a book series that I really wish was more celebrated. It was so important to me as like a little kid. Yeah. And I almost wish it had like a hipster culture where people were putting like prints of it in their home and stuff. I just like want more of a fandom around the busy world of Richard Scarry.
Oh my God, I loved.
Absolutely.
I had this toy from Burger King that was from the busy world. Because it was, yeah, I think that did have a moment when we were too young to appreciate it.
Well, and I'm just, I think honestly, like the busy world, like really created like a real people watcher in me, or somebody who's even maybe a little bit of a voyeur, and like all these cross sections of houses that you could watch the chaos in.
Oh my God, I mean, Jill, that's so you too.
Be ready. I Jill's would be not ready to get binoculars and to like look into your apartment. I'm like, let's go.
I'm ready to join both these fandoms.
Yes, Jill. I just want to also say personally that, like, Jill, I had, like, parasocial camaraderie with you from listening to Book It. And I'm just so happy that we do have things in common. Like, I, in my own mind, had invented independently prior to this conversation.
I do that.
Just, oh. Like, Jill and I have some stuff in common. It's coming to a head. I love it.
I love that you do that because I do that with people too. And then I'm like, wait, is that a real thing about you or a thing I invented about you?
Oh, it seems real. I don't know. I hope it's real.
Why are you like this? We love you guys so much. We have had so much fun. Please tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yes. You can find us always on the internet. If you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at whyareyoulikethispod@gmail.com. We're on Instagram at whyareyoulikethispod, and we're on Twitter at WAYLTTweets.
And streaming, you pretty much find us anywhere that you're already listening to this podcast.
All right. Well, until next time.
See you guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Birgit-Ragasy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.